you. And thank you to Paul and to Ovail for having me. I'm delighted to be here. I'm going to read some poems from my first book, Charms Against Lightning, and then I'll read some newer poems as well. This first poem is inspired by the story of Cain and Abel. According to tradition, after Cain murders his brother Abel, he's sent east into Nod. And for a long time, scholars assumed that Nod must have been the name of some long-lost country. And then, in the 20th century, have come to the conclusion that Nod, in fact, is a word. was a Hebrew word, and it meant something entirely different. So this poem is called The Land of Nod. Growing up, I barely knew the Bible, but read and reread the part when Cain drifted east, or was drawn that way, into a place of desolation, the land of Nod. There to begin with a wife of unknown origin, another race of men, under the mark of God. As a boy, I thought Nod would be a place where the blue scillas would bloom gray, a country of the rack and screw, the serrated sword, where the very serving cups were bone. As a grown man, I've heard that Nod never was a nation of Cain's offspring or anyone, but a mistranslation of wander. So Cain could go wherever and be in Nod. Far more than in God, I believe in Cain, who destroyed his own brother, and therefore, in any city, could have his wish and be alone. Many of the poems in Charms Against Lightning are about shadows and doppelgangers and ghosts. The book as a whole describes a journey from being a ghost to becoming a person. This poem is about a shadow who has no conception that he is a shadow. He believes himself to be a person. The poem is called Ghost Life. My shadow steps outside, a knit scarf double-wrapped around his throat. He's wearing his feel-good canvas coat, a hand-me-down with frayed cuffs and an ink splotch where a pen burst in a side pocket years ago on a colder day. A Safeway bag blows willy-nilly across a puddle full of bricks, and treetops are raucous clown wigs and daubs of oil paint. My shadow feels my company, my stepping as he steps. Feels, although he knows it can't be true, that the fall and all its wreckage were invented just for him. Nameless as a water drop, he walks sideways up a wall and is taller with every step and thinner than a flame. Thank you. It's kind of you to clap, but I've got a lot of really short poems. So if you would like to hold your any applause to the end too, that's perfectly fine too, whatever you like. But I'm a lot of little short ones. I'll warn you now in advance. This next poem is a love poem of sorts. It's called Independence. We are famous friends, here to get drunk, stoned, here for the fireworks, the night of Independence Day. Ovals spawning Xeroxed ovals across a gassy sky, each boom pursuing its fiery halo. Happy marriage, someone cries, I do. I don't. I might someday. Here's to the stars and bars. To my bed. And you having nowhere else to go. Bring a kiss, not your clothes. To the sky, bright as a bottle shard. To optimism. And all the states, even the boring ones. I know you. The skin graft on your cheek. Your lost dog. Your can't sleep. I might as well be your own hand. Jesus Christ, take off his ring. Keep it off. And put a ring on me. For a long time when I was... for most of my 20s, I think, and maybe some of my 30s too, I had the feeling that if I could just find the right city, I would be perfectly happy. If I could just find the one place where I was meant to live, I would be perfectly content. And I spent a good deal of effort looking for that place. Moved around pretty regularly. This poem is about that search for the ideal city, and it's called Utopia. And I mean the word both in the sense that we mean the word all the time to mean paradise, and also in the sense of meaning no place. Utopia. Finally, he's found his own city, a postcard place that anyone would like, backlit by the romance of an unknown history. Here, sheets and hair perfume the air. Every gate is hammered silver, every song a song and dance. And the balloon seller bares her ivory shoulder for a kiss. The man who spent enormously to feed a fantasy of being from no place, spent what he had and borrowed more, now is completely happy. Except for an idea of an idea that he cannot outpace. Somehow he may have missed something that he should not have missed. Though no doubt this is better than lying on a cold suburban beach, admiring stars so far away he'd be seeing them as they were before the dawn of human speech. This is another country, not an ordinary place, where a man, no matter how exceptional he felt, would finally be erased. This poem is called Sad Robots. Clean steel. Inflexible. But where they're strong is where they're weak. Ginzu knives, not flesh. They cut themselves and fall apart. What do they want? To be waterfalls, or to give new leaf? To bend, unclench, to grow a peach. For a while, I lived in Seattle. It was a difficult time in my life, and wasn't sure if I was going to go on living. And at one point, I was stuck in a downpour and getting pelted by freezing rain, which happens not infrequently in Seattle. Someone went by on an ergonomic bicycle, or reclining bicycle. And in case anyone's unfamiliar with this contraption, it's a bicycle that allows the bicyclist to lean back a little bit while his or her feet are elevated. And it seemed to me outrageous that I could be so sad, and somebody else could just be riding his stupid-looking bicycle wherever he was going. And I felt sure that there was some significance to be gleaned from it, the whole incident.
but it took me a long time to figure out what I was going to say about it. So this poem is called Distracted by an Ergonomic Bicycle. On a rainy morning in the worst year of my life, as icy islets shelled the street, I shared a tremor with a Doberman leashed to a post. We two were all the world until a bicyclist shot by, riding like a backward birth, feet first, in level, gentle ease, with the season's hard breath between his teeth. The rain was almost ice, the sky mild and pale. I saw a milk carton bobbing by on a stream of melting sleet. A bicyclist. He rode away to his home, I guess. I went home where I undressed, left my jacket where it fell, went straight to bed, and slept for 2 days straight. But those clicking wheels kept clicking in my head. And though I can't say why, I felt not only not myself, but that I'd never been. That I was that man I hardly saw, hurling myself into the blast. And that everything I passed, dog, rain, cold, the other guy, I left in my wake, like afterbirth. I'm going to move on to the newer material now. Those poems are all from Charms Against Lightning, which came out 4 years ago. If any of you are interested, I do have a few copies here, and I'm happy to trade them, sell them, whatever, barter system. I will I'm happy to just put them in the hands of interested readers. So if any of you would like a copy, just let me know, and we'll work something out. So something that's changed in my life since that book came out is that I have a son who's 4 years old now, and his name is Henry, and one of the books that my wife and I read to him, he's outgrown it I guess now, but he read it and loved it for a while, was Goodnight Moon. And in case anyone's not familiar with Goodnight Moon, it's a lullaby in which the speaker says goodnight to all the things of the world. Bowl full of mush, an old lady whispering hush, a cow jumping over the moon. So this poem is called Goodnight Moon. I used to be as unsentimental as anyone could be. Now I'm almost absurd, a clown, carrying you on my shoulders, around and around Palmer Square, through the cold night wind, as stores lock up and begin closing down. Good night, fair trade coffee. Good night, Prada shoes. Good night soon, my little son. You're a toothy, 2 foot something sumo, a giddy, violent elf, jabbing your finger at the moon, which you've begun noticing in the last week or two. Moom, moom. For you, the word ends with a mumming as it begins. For me, beginnings and endings are getting hard to tell apart. There was another child your mom and I conceived, would now be reading and teaching you to read, who we threw away when he or she was smaller than a watermelon seed. The chairs, the domestic bears, the clocks, the socks, the house. Once again, strange cow springs from the green ground, beginning the enormous leap that will carry her above the moon. This poem is you'll figure out soon enough who the speaker of this poem is. This poem is called Wolf. No costume, Red Riding Hood, ever could disguise this jaw, this brush-like tail, this tongue. By now, you must be married to a woodcutter, or to a woodcutter's son. But I'm still entangled in the forest of your hair. Come back. Get me out of this nightgown, and I'll show you how to raid a chicken coop, how to step around a snare. Only stroke my face again, like one of the remaining wild places of the world. Does it make me a donkey eating shards of apple from your hand? I'd devour every grandmother in the world to get back into your basket. Look at the savage brambles pasted through my fur. Are my enormous eyes and teeth less enticing than they were? My enemy, the moon, stares down at me like a cauterized eye as I creep into the village and softly call your name. Little scholar, little flame, shy girl in a crimson cowl, let me unfasten the buttons that you've done up to your collar. The shepherd's boy keeps crying wolf because he thinks we'll never come. Red Riding Hood, come help me blow these houses down. It's not like I'm not able to live inside the wall. It just makes me crazy seeing little pigs building up their houses of hickory sticks and straw. This poem is called Ode to an Encyclopedia. Oh, hefty hardcover in the built-in shelf in my parents' living room. Oh, authority on linen paper, molted from your dust jacket, questing beast of blue and gold. You were my companion on beige afternoons that came slanting through the curtains behind a rough, upholstered chair. You knew how to trim a sail and how the hornet builds a hive. You had a topographical map of the mountain ranges on the far side of the moon and could name the man who shot down the man who murdered Jesse James. At 40, I tell myself that boyhood was all enchantment. Hanging around the railway, getting plastered on cartoons. I see my best friend's father marinating in a lawn chair, smiling benignly at his son and me from above a gin and tonic, or perched astride his roof with carpentry nails and hammer, going at some problem that kept resisting all his mending. Oh, my paper brother, my narrative without mending. You had a diagram of a cow broken down into the major cuts of beef, and an image of the Trevi Fountain, the boarding house, the church on the corner. All that stuff is gone. In winter in Toronto, people say a man goes outside and shovels snow, mostly so that his neighbors know just how much snow he is displacing. I'm writing this in Baltimore. For such a long time, the boy wants to grow up and be at large. But posture becomes bearing. Bearing becomes shape. A man can make a choice between two countries, believing all the while that he will never have to choose. This poem is called Drone. I am the drone of a banjo's fifth string. I am the drone that gives bottom to the chanter in a highland fling. Haw, hum. I am the drone of drone itself, planted so pleasurably in the mouth. A monotone, a lodestone. I'm an MQ-9, a reaper drone, ranging wide, circling in the sky. No windows, no cockpit, no one on board. See how my hellfires fly faster than sound. I am drone, from the timbal under the cicada's wing. I gather no pollen and have no sting. Arriving unheard, I haunt the sky and inseminate the queen before I die. I am a poetry that celebrates power. I bring. The White House is empty. I bomb air, I bomb breath. My country, 'tis of thee I sing. I'm gonna wrap up with two last poems. Thank you. Thank you again for having me, for coming, for listening. This first of the two poems is called Troy. The war is wrapping up, and there's nothing left of Troy. Broken stone, broken clay, a smoke stain on the sky. Even the broken skull and back of Hector's little boy. Odysseus, packing up his bags, thinks, soon I'll be home. But this afternoon belongs to Ajax, son of Telamon, standing by a flock of sheep that he's butchered in a rage. And like a man who's just shot up a shopping mall, or a school bus, or a bank, Ajax can answer all this killing only with the killing of himself. Soon he'll sit down and start to weep like a naughty child full of shame, because he is a man-killer, and a man-killer does not kill sheep. The Greeks didn't come to halt a genocide or to spread democracy. Behind their great encampment are their island kingdoms, speckled against the sea. Beyond, scavenged by turning seabirds, are the pillars of Hercules, said to bear the words, "There is nothing beyond this point." And the last poem is called Walking and Talking. Now that my work's done, and it's Saturday, now that my young son is out somewhere with his mom, I might as well roam all morning, spying on the filthy squirrels and on the shapes that disintegrating leaves have painted on the sidewalk. I might as well spend the morning talking to myself, hoping for meaning and unmeaning to braid and begin teaching me what to say. Some days I feel like a monarch at wing, meandering, not really deciding where I go, as programmed as the stubborn birds building nests of twigs and spit. Each bird pipes the song that it was taught and transmits the song to its own offspring. Earthworms driven up by last night's rain have squirmed onto the asphalt to slowly die. I save some who glue and wriggle, but there are just so many. Most I leave to fry. Day by day, I'm feeling my way into fatherhood, learning what my boy is to me, and I to him, my son, my kid, an toothed homunculus, clutching an acorn in his fist, bewildered that a paper plate set down on the grass on a windy day won't stay put, but lofts and spins away. By the time I'm downtown, I'm turning back, in thought, if not yet, with my feet. Before I'm back on my own street, I'll have twice walked by the little wedge of ground where people of this neighborhood bury their dead dogs and cats. A rawhide bone, a ball of yarn, waterlogged by the frowsy rain. Animals have never meant very much to me, but I've got them on the brain these days. How magnetic navigation brings spawning salmon home. How predation, variation, and the winnowing down of things gave shape to a world of species, giving them gills, wings, and feet. But I'd rather be dead than be a creature of any other kind. I walk upright, practicing the song of my species by speaking. Thank you.